From coast to coast across America, it's the U.S. Property Podcast with the latest real estate news, interviews, and market trends.
Hey, welcome back to the U.S. Property Podcast as we focus on the very latest real estate property news from around the country with trends, forecasts, and predictions. And as you know, we are covering 50 states and available on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Amazon. And a reminder too, if there is a particular area that you would like us to report on with property trends and what is happening in any area that really relates to you, then let us know. We talk every week to multiple real estate commentators, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we are covering your suburb that you want information on. So if you've got one of those suburbs, you can email us, and the email address is uspropertypodcast@gmail.com. Again, that is uspropertypodcast@gmail.com. And thank you, Aaron in Pittsburgh, for emailing us to say that you've recently found us. Now, you're absorbing the information, you say, and you're getting ready to buy your first investment property, which is fantastic. And please do get in touch once you have made that purchase. Let us know how the whole process went for you. And you also asked, what is my nationality? Okay, good question. It's one that I get asked a lot. So before I give that out, why don't we run with that question for a week? You tell me, if you're listening right now and you go, yeah, I know what his nationality is, let us know to that same email address, uspropertypodcast@gmail.com. Now, this morning, we are heading off to New York again, and we are catching up with Ari Harkov, an associate real estate broker with Brown Harris Stevens in New York City. And good morning to you, Ari. Welcome to the U.S. Property Podcast.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
I see that you have been doing the real estate for a number of years now, 17 years. Tell us a little bit about your company, because you've got a 20-person team in it, which no doubt keeps you pretty busy.
Yeah, I like to stay busy, that's for sure. I started in New York City in late 2006, early 2007, so about 17 years now, and built up a team over the years with my business partner, Warner Lewis. We are based currently in Soho in Lower Manhattan, and we focus on the residential market, both buyers, sellers, leasing. We do some new development work, some multifamily work that sort of blends a little bit into the commercial sphere, primarily Manhattan, Brooklyn, and the western portion of Queens.
Now, we talk a little bit about how important fitness is in the real estate industry for those that are working within it, because it is a pretty high pressure sort of a job. You were just telling me off air that you're a bit of an endurance athlete. Tell us about that.
Yes, that's correct. I started running fairly seriously. Well, let's say I first started running less seriously about a half a decade or so, and then became more serious, and then picked up cycling, picked up some swimming. I've done one triathlon and, you know, a couple of marathons, a lot of half marathons. And, you know, I find that it's a great way to see the city, to see space, to clear my head, to think, to process. And then, of course, obviously some physical benefit hopefully comes along the way as well. So it's become a passion of mine outside of course, family and real estate.
Well, you say that you got to clear your head, and of course, fitness is a really good way of doing that. But you've got two things going on, not just real estate, but you're the dad of three boys. So getting out of the house is pretty important.
It is indeed. And I try to keep up with them physically as well. So I've got three boys currently, 10, 7, and 3. And you can imagine they have a fair amount of energy. And so, yes, you know, I like to be the dad who can run around with them, ride bikes with them, play with them, and, you know, at least attempt to keep up with their energy levels.
Exactly. That's what it's all about, is keeping up with kids' levels. Now, let's try and keep up with the New York City dynamics of real estate. And to that point, what are some of the dynamics in the first quarter of this year that seem to be sort of standing out for you?
Sure. So I would say, you know, the first quarter of 2024, there are a couple key trends that we're seeing in the market. For those who've been paying attention to interest rate movements, which have obviously been, you know, top of mind and front of the news media, rates have been more or less stable, but have ticked up a little bit from the last quarter or the end of the last quarter of last year, and on a national 30-year fixed rate sticker price level. And granted, most of our borrowers end up at lower rates, but in terms of the kind of sticker price that you'll see in the news media, those numbers are hovering kind of around, you know, 7 to 7.1%. So that bit of an uptick has cooled the market somewhat. And when I say cooled, I mean both sellers and buyers. You know, sellers can potentially be a little bit more hesitant to put their homes on the market, and buyers can be a bit more hesitant to transact. That being said, overall, I would say the second trend is that the market is healthy, active, and fairly stable. So when we look at absorption, which is, you know, the rate of closings as a percentage of the rate of available listings, we're seeing absorption levels that are right in a kind of neutral equilibrium market, maybe starting to lean a bit towards sellers, but right in the kind of, you know, central zone, which is a healthy, active market. It's neither tremendously robust or weak. It's in a, you know, fairly stable place. So I would say that's kind of the second key trend. And then the third key trend, which is a little bit harder to pin down, but I would say is there's some expectancy in terms of the feeling in the market around what the second, third, and fourth quarters will bring, both in terms of rates, obviously some, you know, global conflict, the upcoming presidential election, you know, a variety of different factors that are on people's minds as they think about, you know, decisions they're going to make.
On the elections, how much of a talking point is that sort of conflating towards the real estate market itself in New York? Like, is that a consideration for vendors, sellers to go, you know what, I might just wait until after the election? Is there a little bit of that?
Elections, and when I say elections, I mean more kind of, you know, consequential presidential elections, because I think, you know, congressional and local elections tend to be less impactful. But on, you know, on a national election scale, every 4 years or so, we tend to see that as you approach the actual election, so as you get into, you know, kind of late summer, early fall, the market tends to slow down a bit as you get people talking about exactly what you were saying, which is, you know, maybe I'll put off my decisions until after the election. This election is a bit different for two reasons. One, it's been proven that you have a fair number of Americans who are not particularly thrilled with either option. So you have that. And then you also have the fact that both options have already sort of established themselves. So neither presents candidate presents himself as a particular surprise. And so I think on the one end, you've got some disappointed people. But on the other hand, you have a lot of people who are sort of saying, I've been here before, we've experienced this. And so I'm not going to put my decision off. I'm going to just move forward with whatever, you know, is happening in my real estate life or maybe happening in my real estate life. And so I don't know if we'll see the same kind of pullback as we move further on in the year as we might have in, let's say, 2020 or 2016.
Yeah. And since we're talking sentiment, just in regard to the economy, because, you know, you kind of got half the country saying we're in a much better state now. And then we've got the doomsdayers saying, oh, no, it's terrible. But just with regard to real estate and the economy, is the sentiment that you're feeling there in New York City strong?
So the answer is New York City is a bit of a mixed bag these days. On the one hand, you have very strong employment numbers, and obviously New York City benefits from that. You have a financial sector that has been incredibly strong, and bonuses were strong last year, and New York City benefits from that. And you also have, I would argue, probably one of the most healthy, if not the healthiest, recoveries of a major urban area post-COVID. So I think that all bodes quite well. The flip side is you also have low office occupancy. So while we've recovered significantly, we're nowhere near where we were from a tax revenue perspective and office occupancy perspective and just kind of, you know, overall foot traffic as where we were in the first quarter of 2020 pre-COVID. You still have a bit of the spillover effects from that work from home in terms of, you know, folks wanting to live in the suburbs or maybe willing to consider housing arrangements outside of the city because they're working, let's say, 2 days a week or 3 days a week in the city as opposed to 5 days a week. week. So that has an impact. And then you have some other, you know, concerns that have been in the news media around, you know, migrant crisis and other things happening that are uniquely impactful to New York. So I think the long and the short of it is overall, the city is in a very good place, but there are certainly a mixed bag of ups and downs that are specific to New York that, you know, maybe other parts of the country, particularly suburbs, as you mentioned, aren't experiencing to the same extent.
Yeah, and just talking about some of those differences, particularly for anybody that is outside of New York listening in today, what are some of those differences between New York and the rest of the country when it comes to real estate?
We could talk about that for probably hours, but I would say on a high level, you know, a couple things to think about. So first is if you look at the U.S. housing landscape, roughly 2/3 of Americans own their home and roughly 1/3 of Americans rent their home, roughly speaking. New York is approximately roughly the inverse. So roughly 2/3 of New Yorkers are renters and roughly 1/3 are homeowners. So New York is and remains and probably will remain for quite a number of years, primarily a renter's city. So that's the first thing I think that is a very key differentiating factor between New York City and the rest of the country. The second key differentiating factor would, of course, be the nature of the housing stock in New York City. So you're dealing primarily with cooperatives and condominiums. Those are apartments, you know, that we transact, we sell and buy. We're not dealing with single family homes with driveways and backyards and garages. Those exist in very small numbers and typically in the boroughs, not, you know, in Manhattan and kind of the northwestern portion of Brooklyn that most of us talk about when we talk about New York City real estate. So the housing stock itself is quite different, which impacts the process, impacts carrying costs, impacts, you know, the way in which New Yorkers live, a whole host of factors. And then the last piece of the equation, I would say, which is probably sort of obvious, but, you know, should be stated, is the cost of living. So, you know, New York real estate has not appreciated in the same way that the U.S. housing market has appreciated over the last couple of years, but it is still an incredibly expensive place to live, whether to purchase a home or rent a home. And that limits the buyer pool to, you know, a smaller subset of folks who can afford both the incoming sticker price as well as the ongoing carry of these homes.
Yeah, and you mentioned buying. So let's stick with that. When buying in New York City, what are some of the front of mind things that people should really be paying a reasonable amount of attention to?
So I guess going dovetailing from that, you know, previous conversation around the housing stock. So when you are buying an apartment in a cooperative or a condominium, one of the things that you initially have to recognize is the fact that you own a small piece of a larger building, and the health of that building, both physically and financially, is critical in terms of the impact on your investment. So if the building is well run, if the financials are in good shape, that's one thing. If you have a building that is poorly run, or the financials are in poor shape, or the building has to undergo major construction on the facade, or any other number of, you know, larger capital elements, that can obviously impact the health of your financial investment one way or the other. So I think that's one of the first kind of critical pieces that exists certainly in other markets, you know, a Boston or an LA or what have you, but is predominant in a place like New York. So I would say that's number one. And then number two, New York becomes, while it is a very large city with a lot of people, becomes a fairly small city for most of those folks who live there. And so it's really trying to figure out, I'm not going to live in New York City. I'm going to live in Chelsea, or I'm going to live on the Upper East Side, or I'm going to live in Park Slope, Brooklyn, or wherever it is I want to be, and understanding the nuances of those different neighborhoods and what they offer in terms of, you know, coffee shops, restaurants, access to public transportation, green space, access to, you know, office spaces, all the different things that, you know, you may care about in a housing decision. So other parts of the country obviously have neighborhoods, but within New York City, a 3-mile delta might mean a 45-minute commute on the subway. And so you want to really think about, you know, where you want to be and what's important to you as you think about your search. So I would say that's, you know, kind of a critical element. And then I would say the last piece is the way in which real estate is transacted in New York is quite different from any other part of the country. We don't have an MLS. We have something that's fairly similar, but we don't have an MLS. We have paperwork and approval processes with co-ops and condos that are different. Even though you may be able to qualify for a loan, it doesn't mean that you can necessarily buy in the building. And so having a local advisor, having understanding of the market and the process is quite different from many parts of the country where, you know, contracts are done on iPads by real estate agents. That's not the case in New York City.
All right. So that is a little bit of a taste for New York City today. And Ari, thank you so much for coming on to the US Property Podcast. Good luck with the three boys that sound pretty active and your endurance athlete. And enjoy your day.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your having me.
While we can't predict the future of the real estate market, we can provide you with insights on what's currently trending. It's powerful information at your fingertips on the U.S. Property Podcast.
Because you're scared, you've never done this before, it's intimidating. Not only are you undertaking this daunting task to buy your first house, you're doing it in likely a multi-offer situation.
Yes, it's a good one to mention because people need to be finance ready. They need to have a whole bunch of things ready to go.
You are 100% right. And it's even worse than that because oftentimes these first-time home buyers are younger. They're being advised by their parents. And, you know, their parents bought their last house 20 years ago. And it is a much different process than what it used to be. They're one of my favorite sectors of clients because you can really prepare them for their real estate journey for their entire lives if you educate them well.
From powerful and up-to-date news to professional real estate experts with the latest property trends, know your property with the U.S. Property Podcast.